Iran's leader tells the visiting Sultan of Oman that regional countries should be aware of the Israeli policy to create discord in the region. No end in sight to Israeli violence in the West Bank as regime forces kill more Palestinians during raids in the occupied territory. And the Turkish president calls for unity after winning the runoff vote as the defeated opposition leader complains of what he calls the most unfair election in recent years. Welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned to World News. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Appreciate you being with us. First story takes us right here in Iran, where the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says all-out expansion of ties with Oman will benefit both countries. Ayatollah Khamenei says Tehran and Muscat should continue their negotiations with seriousness to get tangible results that lead to expanded relations. And the leader made the comment in a meeting with the visiting Sultan of Oman, Haitham bin Tariq. Ayatollah Khamenei also underlined the significance of increased cooperation between Iran and Oman, seeing how they share what he called the very important Strait of Hormuz. The leader also warned about the risk posed by Israel in the region, saying the regime and its supporters seek discord among regional countries. Ayatollah Khamenei also hailed the Iranian government's efforts to improve relations with regional countries, including Saudi Arabia. He noted that Iran is also open to restoration of ties with Egypt. Earlier during the meeting, the Sultan of Oman said Egypt was willing to restore diplomatic ties with Iran. He also said Muscat seeks closer cooperation with neighboring countries, especially Iran.
Tehran is once again the destination of yet another high-profile visit by head of state of one of Iran's leading neighbors. The Sultan of Oman, Haitham bin Tariq Al Said, leading a high-ranking delegation, arrived in the Iranian capital on Sunday. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi officially welcomed the Omani leader. The two leaders then held private discussions and signed cooperation documents in a number of fields, including economy, investment, and energy. Prior to his meeting with the Iranian president, the Omani Sultan held a meeting with Iran's vice president, Mohammad Mukhbir. Referring to close political ties between Iran and Oman, Mukhbir said the two countries should increase their economic and trade ties to a level that could match their political relations. Sultan Haitham Al Said's entourage to Tehran includes Omani Foreign Minister Sayyid Baz bin Hamad Al Busaidi, who met with his Iranian counterpart Hossein Amir Abdollahian. Following their meeting, the two officials held a joint press conference where they briefed reporters on the agreements reached by the two sides.
The documents, which focus on cooperation in the fields of energy, investment, free zones, as well as in the areas of industry.
Iran's foreign minister added that other issues were also discussed by the two leaders, namely the transit of goods, the Ashgabat Agreement, as well as quadrilateral transit deal between Iran, Oman, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. He said closer cooperation among regional countries was also emphasized during negotiations between the two leaders. The Omani foreign minister, for his part, noted that the two sides reached good agreements in a bid to further enhance their age-old relations.
Well, the Sultan of Oman's visit to Iran comes as Muscat has for many years played a leading role in putting an end to hostility, both at regional and international levels. Now, with Oman's mediation efforts to end such hostility on one side and regional determination to boost diplomatic relations on the other, it seems that countries in the West Asia region are becoming integrated in the face of a unilateral world.
The visit by Sultan of Oman Haitham bin Tariq Al Said to Iran comes at the official invitation of President Ebrahim Raisi. The invitation was extended as part of President Raisi's policy of deepening ties with countries in the region. The two-day trip marks a significant milestone in ties between the two regional allies. A Officials from both countries have said the trip will open new avenues for closer diplomatic cooperation, increased dialogue, and engagement at the highest levels. As far as the economic potential between the two countries is concerned, Iran and Oman are seeking better opportunities to develop their relations. Chairman of the Iranian side in the Omani-Iranian Joint Business Council, Jamal Razzaghi, says Iran aspires for increasing the size of the exchange of trade with Oman to $5 billion. This is possible as there are great opportunities for trade between the two countries. Iran does not view Oman as an economic market, but as a vital strategic partner. The improvement of trade relations has the potential to expand to other areas as well. Iran's ambassador to Oman, Ali Najafi Khoshroudi, says Sultan Haytham al-Said's visit to Tehran will foster an unprecedented level of partnership and cooperation between the two nations. Apart from the economic aspect of the trip, the Omani Sultan's visit to the Islamic Republic is of high significance for the development of multilateral diplomatic relations and a strengthening of regional integration. Prior to his Iran trip, Sultan Haytham al-Said paid an official visit to Egypt, where Egyptian officials were cited as saying that Cairo and Tehran are expected to normalize ties as part of a process mediated by Oman. Regarding the Saudi Arabia-Iran deal, it was Oman that mediated negotiations for 2 years. Oman has also been the chief architect of normalization of relations between Syria and the Arab League. Mediating talks between Saudi Arabia and Yemen's Ansar Allah movement was also another turning point in the history of the Persian Gulf Arab state. In a broader aspect, Oman has for decades been an interlocutor in interactions between Tehran and the West. The country has mediated the release of several foreign citizens and dual nationals. Now with Muscat and Tehran trying to deepen their relations in numerous fields, including political and economic, it seems that regional and international developments are moving toward a multipolar world, something that the collective West has left no stone unturned not to let that happen.
Said Mohammed Marandi is a university professor and political analyst. He puts into context the Omani Sultan's visit to Iran.
Iranian-Omani relations have always been good, and cooperation has always existed at very different levels, both political and economic ties. And Oman wants to become a hub for business as well, and Iran is an ideal partner. But I think after the rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia and the changes that are taking place across West Asia and the Persian Gulf, the Saudis rethinking their ties with Syria, negotiating with Yemen, and the potential for the formation of a government in Lebanon, along with other changes that we see between countries in the Persian Gulf region, small countries that have been under the sway of Saudi Arabia. These changes together, I think, bring about a new era for our region. And Oman, having this very good relationship with Iran, stands to benefit a lot from these changes.
Iran says a recent security agreement it signed with Iraq facilitates cooperation in all fields. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Akbar Ahmadiyad, made the announcement during a meeting with his Iraqi counterpart in Tehran. He called the agreement a roadmap for establishing security at the border, stressing the need for the precise implementation of its stipulations. Tehran expects Baghdad to guarantee border security based on the agreement and to put an end to the presence of anti-Iran elements on Iraqi soil. For his part, Qasem al-Urji stressed that Iraq's commitment to the recent agreement and said the Iraqi government and its national security body is determined to interact with Iran in all fields. Two more Palestinians succumbed to injuries after being shot by Israeli forces in raids in the occupied West Bank. One of the Palestinians lost his life after he was critically injured in an incursion in the city of Jenin. The raid triggered confrontation with locals, where seven others were also wounded. The other Palestinian man succumbed to his injuries he had sustained in an Israeli raid in Al-Khalil 2 days ago. Earlier today, regime forces also carried out a separate raid in a village near Ramallah. They shot and injured two more Palestinians there. Now, the regime has intensified its crackdown across the occupied territories in recent months. Nearly 150 Palestinians have lost their lives in Israeli attacks in the West Bank alone this year. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, for more details about the latest Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank.
After the incursion to Jenin has ended, the Palestinian 37-year-old Palestinian Ashraf Ibrahim succumbed to his injury. Palestinian paramedics say that Ashraf Ibrahim was shot in the abdomen and the chest. Then he succumbed to his injuries. Ashraf Ibrahim, 37-year-old from Jenin, was an officer in the Palestinian security forces, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. During the operation, six other Palestinians were arrested by the Israeli soldiers. The Israeli military issued a statement saying that has been under fire when Palestinian fighters hurled explosive devices towards the Israeli forces in raiding Jenin city, and that the Israeli troops had confiscated a number of Palestinian arms and weapons, as well as other military equipment in the city of Jenin. Israeli military also said that six other Palestinians had been arrested in other areas of the occupied West Bank, and they claim that those who were detained, not in Jenin, in other areas of the occupied West Bank, are involved in anti-Israeli operations, that they had took part in shooting towards Israeli settlers and Israeli forces.
Well, the Israeli regime has carried out yet another airstrike on Syria, this time targeting positions in the capital, Damascus. A number of explosions were heard shortly before midnight local time. The Syrian military says the country's air defenses responded to the attacks using anti-aircraft. It says the attacks only caused some material damage. Well, the strikes were the first on Damascus since late March, but the last Israeli raid on Syria itself was in early May. And that one left seven people dead in the northwestern city of Aleppo. Israeli regime routinely carries out airstrikes on Syria. Officials in Damascus have for a number of times called on the United Nations to force the Israeli regime to stop its aggression. They say the move is in violation of international law. Our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali, says Israeli airstrikes in Syria are aimed at helping the remainder of the terrorists who have been fighting the Syrian army for years now.
No one was killed or injured, and definitely this is not the first attack of its kind. We don't know for sure or in particular what was exactly targeted, but it seems that there were some military positions for the Syrian army around the Syrian capital. The Israeli side, as usual, did not comment on the issue, but tens if not hundreds of attacks by Israel have been carried out since the start of the crisis, and the Syrian government, especially the foreign ministry officials, always stress that those attacks are in direct support of the remaining terrorist groups in Syria. It's also worth mentioning that every time there has been a military advancement for the Syrian army against terrorists on the ground, we used to see similar Israeli attacks, and those attacks this time come following political achievements for Syria, especially following Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's presence in the Arab League summit, following the reconciliations from the Arab world with Syria. So some analysts believe that those attacks are actually indirect support of those remaining terrorist groups in Syria, that Israel's wanted to say to them that we are still back.
Now to Turkey, where President Recep Tayyip Erdogan wins re-election in Sunday's runoff vote, extending his rule into its third decade. Well, with over 99% of ballot boxes opened, Erdogan garnered more than 52% of the votes. His rival Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu received nearly 48%, trailing Erdogan by more than 2 million votes. The country's Supreme Election Council says the uncounted ballots will not change the results. After he was declared the winner, Erdogan addressed a crowd of his supporters outside of the presidential palace in the capital, Ankara. He called on Turks to unite in favor of the country's national goals.
It's time to unite and unify around our national goals and national dreams, leaving aside all discussions and disputes regarding the election period.
Erdogan also says the election is Turkey's most important in the modern era, adding the entire nation is the winner. Opposition leader Kılıçdaroğlu has not explicitly conceded defeat. He says the election was the most unfair in recent years, and Erdogan's party mobilized all means of the state against him. However, he thanked people who voted for him. Now to Ukraine, which says it has repelled another major airstrike on the capital, Kiev, a day after Russia unleashed its largest drone attack on the city so far. Officials said air defenses intercepted over 40 drones and cruise missiles overnight. No damage or casualties have been reported. On Saturday, a similar volley of attacks killed 2 people and wounded 3 others in Kiev. Ukrainian military authorities have counted 15 airstrikes on this city only this month. The intensified fighting in Kiev comes after a lull of nearly 2 months. The main targets are military facilities and supplies. Russia has also warned the West against providing more advanced weapons to Ukraine, including F-16 fighter jets. Well, the Spanish Prime Minister has called for snap elections after his Socialist Party lost regional and local polls to the opposition Popular Party. Pedro Sanchez said in a televised message that his decision was to dissolve parliament and call for a general election on July the 23rd. He says the Spanish people need to clarify their demands. With 31% of the votes, the right-wing Popular Party has made significant gains in 6 regions that has been under the ruling Socialist Party's control. The date is set for late July, 5 months ahead of the next election, was due to be held. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Limelight.
Gun violence is always a critical topic during U.S. elections, but experts see little hope in the U.S. political circle to address the issue due to its historical complexity and the extremely polarized stances of Democrats and Republicans, even as gun-related tragedies continue to occur in the United States of America. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more, please. Global Times noted, in the latest reflection of the miserable situation over the past week, Alabama witnessed another mass shooting tragedy in the U.S., with 4 deaths and 28 injuries, while the potential Republican presidential candidates still reportedly rejected the idea of more restrictions that could curb the bloodshed as they spoke at the annual gathering of the National Rifle Association, NRA. The Alabama shooting happened the same day that shots were fired into a crowd at a park in Louisville, Kentucky. 2 people were killed and 4 others were wounded. That incident was the city's 2nd mass shooting in less than a week. On April 10th, a gunman killed 5 people and injured several others at Louisville's Old National Bank, according to CNN. According to data released by the Gun Violence Archive, GVA, across the U.S., a total of 157 mass shootings have happened this year as of April 16th, indicating an average of 1.48 cases per day during this period. These shootings have resulted in 12,358 deaths, with 413 aged under 17 and 9,600 injuries, according to data updated recently. But former President Donald Trump still insisted that this is not a gun problem in his speech recently during NRA annual gathering. Mike Pence, Trump's vice president, also towed the line by saying that people should stop trampling on the God-given rights of the American people every time a tragedy happens, according to a New York Times report recently. Liu Xiang, research fellow at the Chinese Academy of Social, pointed out that the issue has been totally politicized and became a label of partisan conflict in the U.S. Liu told the Global Times recently, "In the U.S., the Democrats have to call for banning or managing guns, while Republicans will definitely stress freedom in owning guns. It's as if they're not Democrats or Republicans if they do not stick to the party's stance. Such polarized stances have resulted in there being no space for the two parties to negotiate over the issue, which Liu deemed as the main reason why the problem of gun violence in the U.S. cannot be resolved as its root. This is a typical systematic problem of the United States," Liu noted. The Insider reported, during the NRA annual meeting, photos of children handling firearms also made the rounds on U.S. social media platforms over the weekend, even though the association said that they had rendered the guns at the exhibitions incapable of being fired gun control advocates slammed the scene as saying responsible gun owners and parents would not allow a child to put their finger on a firearm's trigger while pointing it at other people, even if they are props. Yuan Zheng, deputy director and a senior fellow of the Institute of American Studies at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, said that even though gun violence is always a critical issue during the U.S. elections, it will not play a decisive role. Gun violence is a complicated issue combining historical and partisan elements as well as social factors. The current polarized U.S. politics is making it even more difficult to solve the problem, which is actually pathetic and indicates the government's lack of capability, according to Yuan. The U.S. government's inability to address this mission impossible has laid bare the decline of U.S. governance capacity, according to a report China released in February, revealing the truth and facts of rampant U.S. gun violence. In June 2022, U.S. President Joe Biden signed into law what was reportedly the most sweeping legislation aimed at preventing gun violence in 30 years. Biden called the signing of the legislation a monumental day and said it was proof that Democrats and Republicans could find common ground on important issues. However, experts see this so-called gun deal as one that just scratches the surface, as it falls short of the essence of gun control measures expected by the public, such as prohibiting the manufacture, transfer, and possession of semi-automatic assault weapons, and the transfer and possession of large-capacity ammunition feeding devices, and a change to the age at which a person needs to be to purchase an assault-style weapon. They deemed the agreement as being just a joint political show put on by the Democrats and Republicans to trick the public and win votes during the midterm elections, amid an outcry over gun violence following the killing of at least 19 children and two teachers at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, on May 24, 2022.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We reached this phrase in the first sermon of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha, where Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about one aspect of the duties of the messengers, and that is that وَيُرِيهِمْ آيَاتِ الْمَقْدِرَةِ. One of the duties of the messengers is that they show to the people the signs of God's power. And we talked about those different examples that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions. And one of them was that وَمِهَادٍ تَحْتَهُمْ مَوْضُوعٍ. And then he says another point, and he said, وَمَعَايشَ تُحْيِيهِمْ. And those provisions that give them life. So Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about certain provisions that give people life and that enliven them. This is also one of the signs of God's power.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, one of the signs, one of the things that really makes us think about God's power is life itself. Now look here, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that amongst the signs of God's power is ma'aisha tuhyihim, those provisions that make people live. Just imagine you see a body, the person who is alive, after a certain time you see that that person has died. That person could speak, could think, could laugh, could joke, could play, could do all of these different things in life. But suddenly you see that his or her body is on the ground, motionless, not being able to do all of these things that she or he was able to do before this. You know, this should make a person realize that there is something here. There is a power. There is something that this entity had that now it doesn't have. It is some energy, some kind of strength that was existing in this entity, but now that strength isn't there. And how does that strength come? It comes from these various provisions that God has given this entity. For example, the food that he eats, the water that he drinks or she drinks, all of these things, they kind of allow that person to continue to live. Yes, there is a soul that kind of coordinates this whole activity of life. But at the end of the day, there are the material aspects are also there that make a person continuously live. And God wants us to think that, look, how life continues to go ahead with certain things that are there in this universe that look very simple, that look very lifeless, but they are full of life. They are the ones that bring about life. Rather, they are the one of the causes, if not the main cause, they are one of the causes of the continuity of life. وَمَعَايشَ تُحْيِيهِمْ. If a person is a monotheist or a believer in God, he needs to pay attention to this aspect and understand and realize the power of God that is hidden in that thing that causes these people and these entities to continue to live. And that is when a person will truly realize that, look at all of the life that exists in the universe and look at the causes of that life and how that life thrives in this earth. All of it and all of them are aspects of God's power. Another aspects of God's power. This is an important realization. And then a person thinks about his own life also and how he has been able to go ahead in life. And also to realize the fact that the causality of that entity to give life or to allow life to continue, like water, let us say, all of this causality is because of God's power and because of its dependence on that entity, on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is an important thing that makes a believer different from an unbeliever in that a believer now has a deeper realization about existence.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam after that goes on to say, وَأَجَالٍ تُفْنِيهِمْ, and one of the signs of God's power is death, the time, the specific ajal, or we call it the specific time that a person reaches when a person now no longer can continue to live. وَأَجَالٍ تُفْنِيهِمْ. Really, it's something to ponder upon. This ajal, what is it? These different ajal, these different forms of death that a person, you know, that people and human beings experience. It's just like the example that I gave you before, that this person, active person who does everything properly, suddenly now he's dead. All the functions of the body are not working now. They are not continuing to work. And whatever you do, when that time comes, you cannot give that entity life. I want you to think about this. And it happened to me also once. I know it can happen to anyone. Is that when you have a pet at home, let's say like a pigeon or something, and it becomes sick, and you try your best to give it life, like to feed it in different ways, to give it strength, right? And you try everything. You might try, let's say, all means that are there at your disposal to bring back life to that entity. But you can see in front of you that entity is dying and you cannot do anything about it. And this is the reality of the way things work in the universe. If human beings really thought about it, they would then see and witness the power of God in the way death overcomes entities. Another thing that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions, of course, which is very important also, وَأَوْصَى بِن تُهْرِمُهُمْ, another sign of God's power are those things that happen to a person, certain incidents that occur on him, أَوْصَى بِن تُهْرِمُهُمْ, that make that person old, that make a person aged. That is also one of the signs of God's power, inshallah. We shall discuss this in the sessions to come. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
وبالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
President Biden and Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy have reached an agreement in principle to raise the debt ceiling. But the House and Senate still have to approve the legislation before the government runs out of money, which could happen as soon as 5th of June. We take a look at the world media's coverage of the story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Negotiators for President Biden and Republican congressional leaders on Saturday night reached an 11th-hour agreement in principle to raise the debt ceiling. Both sides came to a tentative agreement after weeks of delays that rattled markets and raised fears about a catastrophic default. President Biden and Kevin McCarthy had spoken by phone earlier on Saturday evening, 27th of May, after hours of marathon negotiations. In a statement, Biden said the deal protects my and congressional Democrats' key priorities and legislative accomplishments, adding that it represents a compromise, which means not everyone gets what they want. That's the responsibility of governing. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy had been at the Capitol all weekend and he told reporters on Saturday morning that he was optimistic a deal would be reached. "I just got off the phone with the president." A while ago, McCarthy tweeted, "After he wasted time and refused to negotiate for months, we've come to an agreement in principle that is worthy of the American people." In a brief news conference following the deal, Kevin McCarthy said he expects the text of the bill to be publicly posted by Sunday, and a House vote to take place next Wednesday. He also said he would speak to President Biden again on Sunday. The exact details of the deal were not immediately clear, although CBS News learned that it would raise the debt limit for 2 years and keep non-defense spending flat at 2023 fiscal year levels for 2 years as well. Under the deal, non-defense spending would then increase by 1% in 2025 fiscal year. The deal also maintains funding for veterans' medical care programs, including the PACT Act, which was passed last year and expands benefits to 3.5 million veterans who have been exposed to toxic burn pits during wartime. According to the deal, the PACT Act's Toxic Exposure Fund will keep its funding through at least 2025. Work requirements had been a major sticking point in the negotiations. While the deal included no drastic changes to Medicaid, it was still unclear exactly how the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, and the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF program, would be impacted. Republican House leadership informed rank-and-file GOP members of the deal in a late-night conference call, two sources familiar with the talks told CBS News. Biden administration officials were planning to hold a Zoom call with Democratic House members on Sunday evening. President Biden spoke by phone to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries just prior to the announcement of the deal. The breakthrough came just days before the government was expected to exhaust the ability to pay its bills, an unprecedented event that would send shockwaves through the global economy. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on Friday pushed back the estimated deadline on the so-called X date from 1st of June to 5th of June, giving negotiators some breathing room. The risk of default remains, though, given the slim margin for error for crafting and passing the bill in Congress. Lawmakers must now transform the agreed-upon provisions into actual legislative text, a process that typically takes several days. It must then pass both chambers of Congress, overcoming expected opposition from members of both political parties. Conservatives have demanded drastic spending cuts in exchange for raising the debt ceiling, which Democrats have said should be raised without conditions. Passing the agreement in the House will likely require the votes of dozens of Democrats to offset conservative Republicans who vote against the measure. Some progressives have also vowed to oppose any bill that cuts spending too much. The House and Senate are both recessed for the Memorial Day holiday, further complicating the timeline for passing a bill. Congressional leaders have warned their respective members to be prepared to return to Washington on short notice to vote on the deal. USA Today has also covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy reached an agreement in principle on Saturday, 27th of May, to raise the nation's debt limit and cut government spending, capping a rollercoaster round of negotiations that has brought the nation to the brink of default and economic disaster. The tentative deal finalized during an hour-and-a-half phone call between President Biden and Kevin McCarthy on Saturday night would raise the limit on how much the government can borrow through to the end of 2024. In return, it would cap annual discretionary spending for 2 years, keeping non-defense spending levels flat next year and raising it by just 1% in 2025. While delivering on a host of other cuts that the Republicans had demanded. "We still have a lot of work to do," Kevin McCarthy said in a brief address from the Capitol. "But I believe this is an agreement in principle that's worthy of the American people. It has historic reductions in spending, consequential reforms that will lift people out of poverty into the workforce and reins in government overreach." Kevin McCarthy said he expects to post the text of the legislation on Sunday and hold a House vote on Wednesday. The compromise includes provisions to rescind unspent COVID-19 rescue funds, expedite permitting for energy projects by speeding up environmental reviews, and in another concession to the Republicans, roll back $10 billion of $80 billion in IRS funding approved in President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act last year that was designed to crack down on wealthy Americans and corporations that evade taxes. The deal includes no measures to close tax loopholes used by high earners and corporations. One of the final holdups was expanded work requirements for food stamps and other welfare programs, which Republicans ultimately secured despite the White House's opposition. The deal includes no changes to Medicaid, but contains additional work requirements for recipients of the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF program. It would also overhaul the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, by making able-bodied adults 54 years old or younger without dependent children subject to work requirements to receive SNAP benefits. The current threshold is 49 years old. The changes, which sunset in 2030, also include expanding food stamps for veterans and the homeless. President Biden called the agreement an important step forward that reduces spending while protecting critical programs for working people and growing the economy for everyone. Despite the White House's concessions, he said the deal protects Democrats' key priorities and legislative accomplishments. The agreement represents a compromise, which means not everyone gets what they want. That's the responsibility of governing, Biden said in a statement. He added, the deal is good news for the American people because it prevents what could have been a catastrophic default. Biden urged Congress to pass the agreement right away. President Biden has been racing to reach a budget deal with the House Republicans to get their support for raising the debt ceiling before the U.S. government runs out of money, which the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said is on track to happen by 5th of June. Yet to avert a default, the deal still needs approval in Congress, which is not guaranteed to pass a bill to raise the debt ceiling, even with the backing of both President Biden and Kevin McCarthy. Some hardline conservative Republicans in the House have signaled they won't vote for a negotiated deal on the debt ceiling, regardless of the details of the deal, while others made new 11th-hour threats for border security measures that aren't in the deal.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr.
Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about the truth disguised as falsehood. In one verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following, "And do not mix the truth with falsehood, nor conceal the truth." Well, you know, a lot of people who lie and, you know, try to deceive people, and they never say a very outright lie. You know, they always conceal that lie in some truth or give it a shade of truth. Otherwise, it becomes unacceptable. You know, it's very clearly, clear, and people would understand that it's a lie, and nobody would accept it. In this hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam, he alludes to the same thing. He says, if falsehood was isolated from being mixed with the truth, meaning if it was a pure falsehood, meaning there was no shade of truth to it, it would not be indefinable by those who aspire it. And if the truth was free from being disguised as falsehood, the tongues of its opponents would still be silenced. Meaning, conversely, if the truth was not disguised as something false, this is what, you know, people who, you know, evil people do. People who want to, you know, don't want other people to accept the truth. They present that truth, you know, in the form of a falsehood. They turn it into something, clothe it in wrong. This is what they did with the Prophet Muhammad, like, for example, instead of calling his miracles, they call them sorcery or magic or things like this, right? There's a famous verse in the Holy Quran that says that, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he was very attentive to people when they would come, and he would listen to them completely. And the disbelievers, they gave him, they made fun of him, they called him udhun. It's kind of like a bad term for him. And so, like, these evil people and, you know, bad people, they turn the tables around truth and make it appear to be falsehood. The Imam says the tongues of its opponents would still be silenced. Meaning, if truth was presented as it is, you know, its opponents could not oppose it. But it is often made by taking a little from one and a little from another. The truth and falsehood, they're mixed together until the audience is unable to distinguish that it's true or that it's false, and he ends up rejecting it or accepting it. In a similar way, Imam Ali also alayhi salam, has also been narrated as having said, many a wrong was glossed with verses from the Book of Allah. كَمْ مِنْ ظَلَالَةٍ زُخْرِفَتْ بِآيَةٍ مِنْ كِتَابِ اللَّهِ كَمْ مِنْ ظَلَالَةٍ زُخْرِفَتْ بِآيَةٍ مِنْ كِتَابِ اللَّهِ. And there is a lot of times a falsehood and an instance of misguidance is adorned with a verse from the Holy Quran so that people would accept it. Just as the copper dirham is plated with silver coating. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at truth disguised as falsehood and falsehood disguised as truth in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm